It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's a decision that could drastically reshape the world of college sports, the so-called O'Bannon ruling. It was last Friday. A federal judge ruled that the NCAA's decades-old rules barring payments to college athletes were in violation of antitrust laws. Judge Claudia Wilkenham of the U.S. District Court in Oakland issued an injunction against current rules that prohibit athletes from earning money from the use of their names, from their images in video games and television broadcasts. The decision allows universities to offer football players in the top 10 conferences and all Division I men's basketball players trust funds that can be tapped after graduation. This gives players a chance to share in the billions of dollars in television revenue they help generate for their colleges and for the NCAA. The ruling would take effect in 2016, but does not mandate that players be paid. Joining me to talk about the ruling and its possible repercussions, Bryce Miller is with us, sports columnist with the Des Moines Register. Hi, Bryce.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. We have a couple of athletes, notable athletes, also joining our conversation. Les Jepson is a former Iowa Hawkeye men's basketball player, part of that amazing team in 1986 and 87 that made it to the Sweet 16. It was the team that became the first and only Iowa team to reach number one in the Associated Press poll. He was also drafted by Golden State in the draft in 1990. Les Jepson, welcome to you.
Good afternoon. Good to be here.
Nate Kading is with us, Iowa Hawkeye kicker, played in the NFL for 9 seasons, mostly with the San Diego Chargers. Hello to you, Nate.
Hey, Ben, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Bryce Miller, give us some background here. What led to this decision? What was this case all about?
Well, it originally goes back to, and you had mentioned Ed O'Bannon. He played college basketball at UCLA, and initially it was a challenge to the use of his likeness while he was a college athlete. And to really give a sense of the pace of this, how slowly this has moved, he played for UCLA from 91 to 95, and I think he played his last NBA game maybe 17 seasons ago. So this has kind of been a pitched battle between the potential rights of amateur athletes at the major college level and the NCAA dating back into the 1990s. And where it's evolved, that last year, July 2013, an appeals court shot down a parallel case. I think they were consolidated in the court system of Sam Keller, a quarterback at Arizona State and Nebraska, about the use of his likeness on an EA Sports video game. And all of it has led to a couple of, pretty monumental challenges to NCAA's ability to decide and govern itself in terms of what amateur athletes receive in football and basketball, and also in terms of how they use and protect the money that they earn off those sports.
Mm-hmm. Let's reach out to our listeners. What do you think of this O'Bannon ruling? Do you think college athletes should be paid? How will paying college athletes change college sports in your mind? 1-866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Bryce Miller, before I go to our athletes, what's your read on this? Is this a little tremor in college athletics, or is it an earthquake that will change things forevermore?
Well, we might be 2 or 3 years from knowing if it's an earthquake, but it's heading in that direction. The potential, I think the appeals process available to the NCAA, and there's no one who doesn't think they won't exhaust all those appeal opportunities, could go 2 to 3 years. And as you mentioned, this ruling, the particular O'Bannon ruling, only would begin to affect incoming athletes in 2016. So we're 2 to 3 years potentially from really seeing how this manifests itself. But the potential of it is more earthquake than tremor in my mind, because it allows athletes to share in those revenues in ways that go beyond scholarship or even the cost of attendance that's getting talked about a lot these days. And I think that challenge to the NCAA's financial might, that piece of it, and it's kind of a labor relations issue, and it brings in antitrust laws. And for all those reasons, I don't think we've seen a fundamental challenge to the NCAA like this, dating back to maybe Title IX and the impacts of that in terms of federal legislation.
Les Jepson, give me your reaction to this ruling last Friday.
I think it's a landmark ruling. I think it's going to affect other sports in the NCAA. I think it's going to affect wrestling. It could affect some of the Olympic sports. It could affect tennis, golf. I mean, the other sports that are non-revenue. I think there'll be a shift.
Mm-hmm. So Les Jepsen, what do you see in the future? Give me a picture of how college sports will be different in a few years whenever this monumental shift, as you say, takes place.
Well, I think the NCAA just settled. I think they got a really good deal. If you can pay a whole 99-page ruling, but if you can pay a college kid $2,000, $4,000 a year, that's like a dollar an hour. I mean, you know, the NCAA, let's call it for what it is. It's pro sports. They're getting a scholarship and, you know, room, books, board, tuition, but, you know, who's getting paid? And it's not the athletes. So I think it's going to be a big shift.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this should happen? Do you believe, Les Jepsen, in paying college athletes?
I think it's a big can of worms. I mean, if you're going to, it's going to disrupt, you know, everything. I think that it's going to lead, the players are going to get a sense of entitlement. I think it's going to affect, unfortunately, the other athletes in the other sports. And, you know, it's an institution. So I don't see it helping anything. I think it's just greedy on all levels for everybody, not just the athletes. It's greedy for everybody.
Nate Kading, what do you see?
Just like Les said, I think it's going to open, you know, a lot of unintended consequences here down the road. You know, I think the big thing is it really starts, it's been happening for 10, 15, 20 years, as the NCAA has made billions of dollars every year off of TV rights and, you know, all the commercial aspects of it. You know, is the fan really starting to move away from their idea of what amateur athletics really is? I mean, let's call it what it is. It's not that anymore. I mean, back in the day, they used to define amateurism as, you know, a love of sport. And then now you look it up and it's, you know, someone that gets paid for doing something. So the world, as it has a tendency to do, has changed a little bit, as has our interpretation of amateurism. And it's not that anymore. These college athletes, just like Les said, are getting compensated. I did when I was at the University of Iowa pretty handsomely with a grade A college education and room and board and all those things, which is great compensation, but it's going to change, and I don't think there's anything stopping it.
When you were at the University of Iowa, Nate, did you think that was enough? Did you ever sort of also maybe with your teammates sort of gripe that all this money was being made with your talent and your likeness?
Maybe I'm getting old, but it was 10 years ago, but we never put one thought to it, honestly, and I know it's different now because now you have guys tweeting. You know, I know there's a Wisconsin basketball player, another guy, Bryce probably knows his name, who, you know, he tweeted after they won the national championship in basketball this year how, you know, he had to eat, you know, a ham and cheese sandwich 4 days out of the week. And, you know, guys are more conscious of it because the media is paying more attention to it, and as it goes through the legal process with the O'Bannon case. But we didn't think one thing about it. We just, you know, went and played it, and no one even really talked about it. But I know that that's changed as well, and it is certainly on the forefront of these athletes' minds now.
Nate Kading, you've worked played as an amateur, so to speak, also as a pro, mostly with the San Diego Chargers. So you have this, you know, the two worlds of everyone being equally compensated with a college education at the University of Iowa, but also at the San Diego Chargers, where there's just vast differences between payment. How does that affect a team and play and relations between players?
It has a big effect on it. When you're at Iowa and the university, you know, you're playing for, you know, your place, you know, the state, the institution, everybody, and there's a lot less dynamics in it. You're not playing for that next contract or those other, you know, different things that get in between players, and, you know, it's more of a personal conquest rather than the team. But I think, you know, if you start paying college athletes, you get into all these things that we had to worry about as professional athletes in terms of collective bargaining agreements and, you know, workers' compensation and injuries and annuities and 401ks. And I think Bryce hit on a team. And how do you sustain that as a public institution, being in a bunch of universities around the United States, if you do start compensating all these people, and then they have to have these benefits as you go down the road? So it's certainly more complicated and, you know, way beyond my level of understanding in terms of how they could sustain a full compensation model down the road.
Mm-hmm. Bryce Miller, what does this ruling say about where that money should come from?
Well, I mean, it doesn't really specifically pinpoint that question, but there's so much money in major college athletics in the way that Les, you know, and Nate mentioned in terms of football and basketball. You know, I know that I did an interview in Des Moines a couple of years ago with Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, and I don't want to misquote, but I know this is in the range. I think the NCAA basketball tournament revenues, which include the multi-billion-dollar television contract, that piece alone is over 90 some, you know, low 90s in terms of the percent of overall revenue the NCAA makes. So just one tournament, one event, the money behind that event, all those athletes that are involved, that's a multi-million, billion-dollar enterprise for the NCAA, and that doesn't even factor in college football. So there's money for all of this to come from. I think Nate's point is the best one. It gets so complex and complicated and tangled when you start applying professional questions, standards, structures to what has been amateur athletics. I'll give you one quick example.
Please.
A couple years ago, I talked to Ellis Hobbs. He played football at Iowa State, and I think he played maybe six seasons in the NFL. He was with the Patriots and the Eagles. You know, he played a lot. At one point, he owned the NFL record for the longest kickoff return for a touchdown, 108 yards. So he wasn't a bench guy. He was a pretty significant NFL player. He told me a story. He went back to Ames after his playing days. He's in a mall near campus, and he sees Iowa State selling DVDs, highlights of the season, and there's a cardboard likeness of him here. And he goes, "Well, I wasn't contacted about this. I'm not receiving anything." He'd made enough money in the NFL. He wasn't frustrated about the money piece of it. It was just his likeness being used without his permission. And I think that's at the heart of the EA Sports case. Sam Keller, I know, EA Sports, the video game producer, tried to claim First Amendment freedom of speech rights. They didn't use his number, but the court ruled, the appeals court, that the player that represented him in his mind, and they agreed, same height, same weight, same skin tone, hair color, hairstyle, home state, playing style, visor reference, facial feature, on and on and on. Before that was ever ruled on, the NCAA backed out of its deal. It did not renew its deal with EA Sports, and I think that was the first signal that they saw the potential legal vulnerability of all of this in small ways that Ellis Hobbs is talking about, but in bigger ways that Ed O'Bannon addresses.
Les Jepsen, do you have a similar story where your likeness from your basketball days in college was used without your permission and without any money coming your way?
Well, you know, I'd really, like Nate said, I'm never really concerned about that because I had a great experience in college. It gave me so much opportunity. I got my master's degree at Iowa. I'm on the iClub, National iClub board. You know, I'm very happy with what happened mm-hmm. in my college experience. I got the chance to make a bunch of money in the NBA. Well, you know, so I got out of it what I intended. So what I'm concerned about is the other 95% of people that the other players that call me needing money. Because they're back problems, or you know, people don't see the true face of what happens after college sports, and it's a different picture.
Tell me about one of those experiences. You have former teammates calling you to ask for what?
Well, I mean, like I said, I don't want to delve into it, but you know, most guys that graduate don't graduate. Like they leave their school after 4 or 5 years, and a lot of those guys are struggling. Not guys like me, not guys like Nate, but there's other guys that leave athletics and they put their life into it for 15 years and then they don't get an NBA contract. They go overseas and they make a little bit of money, but they're left with nothing and they need help right now. And those guys that concern me is that if it's a guy that's, you know, doesn't have what I got, that needs $1,000 or $5,000, you know, 10 years after they graduate or 5 years after they graduate. They need guidance with getting the right job. The Daryl Moores are fine. He works at Medtronic. You know, the Matt Bullards are fine. The Ryan Bowens are fine. It's the guys that don't quite get that same chance that I'm concerned about. And
so this is a good thing in your mind because we then would have a trust fund set up for this college athlete, and regardless of whatever future career prospects, that person has at least a trust fund, a sort of safety net of money.
Yeah, but it's going to be like a couple $1,000s. They need the job. They need the university helping them when they're done, not just here's a couple $1,000s. They need a network of help when they're done in case they need it. And
right.
That, it's not going to solve that. You know, maybe it's us as players that got to step up and say, hey, look, this is what needs to be done. I think it's a good start, but the challenge is it's going to affect the Olympic sports. It's going to affect wrestling. It's going to affect baseball. If you take that, you know, extra couple $100,000 or $400,000 and you give it to the athletes, yeah, that's enough for pizza money. When they're done, they're in the same spot, and 10 other sports get cut. It's not going to help anything.
Nate Kading, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, Les is making a good point. Right now, and I don't think a lot of fans know this, that an NCAA scholarship is a one-year renewable scholarship. It's a team can take it away. A guy, you know, he leaves school early, like Les said, he's done after 4 years, tries to pursue a professional career somewhere else, doesn't have his degree. The university isn't beholden to that. And I think that, you know, making that a five-year scholarship, they can come and complete it, or within their trust fund, or athletes be able to have the right to come back and finish their undergrad degree at any point in time. I think that certainly the university, you know, should hold true to that scholarship offer more than just a one-year renewable as well. And I think the universities can find out with these non-revenue-generating sports a way to make it work. If you look across, you know, NCAA Division II colleges, there's over 300 colleges and all the high school as well, that they don't generate revenue, but they're able to somehow, you know, provide an opportunity for the non-revenue generating sports. So I think you can find a way to compensate and fund these trust funds and provide 5-year scholarships to all your athletes and still make it work for some of these non-revenue generating sports.
Here's a tweet from Todd listening in Des Moines. Maybe I can throw this your way, Bryce Miller. The comment here, the tweet, it will be interesting to see how the O'Bannon ruling will be impacted by Title IX. How do you see those going together?
Well, I think this goes back to the point Les made earlier. I think the potential for it, if this money is doled out through these trust funds, if there's a significant amount of, you know, verifiable likeness usage for profit, that kind of a thing, the specter, this is a whole other area, but it's all part of the bigger landscape. The NCAA autonomy that the Big Five Power Conferences just were permitted to gain, and they're going to be able to govern themselves outside of NCAA rules. You know, the question will be, do universities at that point decide to use the likenesses, the Ellis-Hobbs cutout, or now, since it's mandated they'd have to create a trust fund, do they just find a completely unidentifiable player, do they just find ways not to use those likenesses, therefore not pay those that amount of money? So if that money's not going out the door, then I don't think those Olympic sports are as threatened. I think the cost of attendance, which is another piece of this kind of shifting sand under everyone's feet in college athletics, that in a mandated way, once that comes through, and I think everybody believes that it will, that has the potential to truly affect those Olympic sports. But you know, that's these bigger conferences, that's the shadow over all this. They threaten to say, well, we have autonomy outside of the NCAA. Football and basketball pay our bills. We have multi-billion-dollar television networks. We're going to go ahead and do all these things, and we're going to cut the swimming team. They're still going to be required to stay. None of these changes will provide the ability for any university to not comply with Title IX. That's federal legislation. They're always going to be required to have that balance of female and male opportunities in college athletics. But the decisions about how they use that money in terms of these likeness cases and cost of attendance, if that's the kind of thing that makes a decision, we're going to get rid of the swimming team if we're still in line with Title IX. All those things are so interconnected, and that's why this is so complex.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have just a couple minutes left, but I think it was right at the start of the conversation, was it you, Les, or Nate, talking about the sense of entitlement that you were concerned about, Les Jepson. Does this mean colleges and universities will engage in bidding wars for the best athletes? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I don't know if that would happen. I don't have a crystal ball, but, you know, if guys think they're going to get paid to come to school, if the top guy thinks he's going to get paid, the 10th man, the 11th man, or 12th man have got to get compensated too, because that's part of the team. If there is no team, there is no game. So if it's going to be one guy getting money, it better be everybody on that team getting money.
But not to the same degree, or do you mean that as well?
It better be the same, because if they're fielding a team, people watch the players, not the coaches, not the athletic director, right? It's that they watch the players, and every player on the team is important. And if one guy gets paid more than the other guy, I don't see that as fair in that regard. I just don't see it as fair.
Nate Kading, we have just a minute or two left. What questions do you have in your mind going forward when you look at the future of what might happen?
I worry a little bit about the fan. I mean, I think there's has been some sensitivity. You know, more I've paid attention to it even in the last couple of years with prices, and you know, that they're really shouldering the burden of, you know, paying coaches these astronomical fees and rising costs and all these other issues, and you start talking about going to, you know, a game at Kinnick Stadium and for parking and season tickets and all that sort of thing, and then having to make an iClub donation on top of that. I mean, you wonder where the threshold really is. I definitely saw it at the NFL level too. I mean, it's pricey to go to a game, and you know, if the costs are rising elsewhere due to the O'Bannon case, then who's going to pay for it in the end? And you know, you kind of worry about the fan and their ability to go and enjoy the game with their kids.
Bryce Miller, in the last 30, 40 seconds, tell us what you'll be looking at on the horizon as to further indications of how this will develop and change college sports.
I don't think anybody knows where to look because there are so many directions to look. We didn't even talk about unionization that came out of the Northwestern football player case. Unionization, likeness cases, trust funds, cost of attendance, all of these things in their interconnectedness, it's wholesale change in college athletics unlike anything the country's ever seen.
Mm-hmm. And who's potentially, the players could win some here, all players, but the losers could be who, Bryce Miller?
Well, and I think Les is right. The losers potentially, depending on how some of these cards land on the table, could be non-revenue sports, you know, that fall outside of Title IX protection. And that's the trickle-down of all of this that makes you wonder where it's all headed.
Bryce Miller, we'll keep updates from you, we hope. Sports columnist with the Des Moines Register. Thank you, Bryce Miller.
Thank you.
Nate Kading and Les Jepson, thank you very much for joining this conversation.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on this program, we'll look back at Watergate 40 years ago. Richard Nixon resigned as president, the only commander-in-chief ever to do so. We'll remember Watergate with former Des Moines Register columnist David Jepson, also Jim Hutter. He taught a college class about Nixon's downfall. What are the lessons of Watergate? How has our country learned from them? We'll have that conversation tomorrow. Help today from Sarah Bowden. We're produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for listening.